Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. I can take off my mask here because they're expendable. I don't know if I've told you this story before. It's possible, and then it's also likely that if I have, you've forgotten it, so it's okay. But there is a great story told about St. Anthony of Egypt, St. Anthony the Great, the first monk, who was the first to go out and live in solitude for God back in the 200s. And he's one of the greatest saints in the church. There's a lot of stories about him. One of my favorites is one day Anthony had a vision, and he looked up and he saw the entire world and everything and every surface and every bit of it was covered in traps. I was covered in snares set by Satan. And there was not a safe thing or a safe space on the face of the planet. No matter what existed, Satan would be able to twist it to make a sin. And Anthony groaned from the depth of his being and cried out to God, "Then how can man be saved?" And God thundered one word from heaven: humility. Humility. Dear brothers and sisters, we've been on a long journey through the virtues ever since Advent. And we've talked about faith, hope, and love, the three theological virtues. And we've been talking about prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude, the four cardinal virtues. And these are the seven biggies. These are the ones you should know. And it's very important. I hope you've got them sealed in your brain by now. But there is one incredibly important virtue that doesn't fall in either of those lists, because it's neither a theological virtue nor is it a cardinal virtue, but it is, if we're going to create its own category, a fundamental virtue. One that lies at the base of all of our spiritual life. And that is the virtue of humility. The virtue of humility. And I want to be very clear that humility is a virtue. It's not just an emotion and it's not just an action. It is, like all the other virtues, a habit. It becomes second nature to the one who possesses it, right? The one who lives in humility will do humble things more or less automatically. They live in that humility. It becomes second nature to them, the same way that English is second nature to most of us, where as soon as we open our mouth, we don't have to pick which language comes out. It's automatically English. So also the humble person lives humility automatically, and that's a beautiful thing. But in order to discuss it, in order for us to process it, especially as we begin to turn toward the great season of penance and self-denial and humility, which is Lent that starts Wednesday, I want to take a moment to think about humility, to reflect on humility, especially because a number of the points in the readings today point to both humility and how you know if you don't have it. Okay. So the first thing I want to say is that a lot of people have a mistaken idea about humility. They think that humility is always being self-deprecating or always putting yourself down or always kind of shrinking into a corner or always, you know, just insulting yourself, basically. And no, that's not what humility is. That's a kind of false humility. And that doesn't mean that everybody's always to blame for that. A lot of times that comes from unhealthy households. But true humility, as the saints teach us, is nothing other than knowing the truth about yourself and accepting it. Knowing the truth about yourself and accepting it, living in that truth. Okay? And that means that you know your faults, and you know your failures, and you know your self-justifications, and you know your evasions, and you know the little lies you tell yourself, but it also means you know your genuine gifts, and you know you're genuinely loved by God, and you know the actual genuine value of you. And that's why truly humble people And this is an irony, but it's there. It's a paradox. Truly humble people are also the truly most confident people, because they're not lying to themselves. And so they're never afraid that they'll be exposed, right? If they do something, it's because they know they can do it. And if they don't do something, it's because they know they can't, right? And if somebody tells them, oh, you're arrogant, they're like, yeah. Right? Like, I do struggle with that. Okay, right? The person who puffs themselves up is always worried that somebody's going to burst their bubble, filled with imposter syndrome and all those other things. But if you look at the saints, if you look at Jesus, fully humble, man, fully confident. Jesus didn't go around like, oh, I'm sorry. Let me tap you on the shoulder, excuse me, right? And so I want to look at one of the things that Jesus says today. Why do you notice the splinter in your brother's eye, but do not perceive the wooden beam in your own? How can you say to your brother, brother, let me remove that splinter in your eye, when you do not even notice the wooden beam in your own eye? Yeah, this is humility, right? If you go around judging everyone else, but you don't recognize the truth about yourself, that you have these huge struggles, that you have these huge problems, then you're going to make a pretty poor surgeon, right? You know, if you are that blind that you have a wooden beam in your eye, you could probably become an NFL ref, but you shouldn't go around trying to help people. Okay. The reality is, dear brothers and sisters, we have to know ourselves. But notice, Jesus doesn't fuss at people for correcting others. He doesn't fuss at people for trying to help others. No. Because what does he immediately say? Remove the wooden beam from your eye first, then you will see clearly to remove the splinter in your brother's eye. The problem was never correcting someone else. The problem was correcting someone else as if you were their superior. And you see, humble people, genuinely humble people, the few that I've known in my life, are also genuinely helpful people. And they're helpful not out of some compulsion or need to be liked or people-pleasing. None of that enters in. They're genuinely helpful because they're compassionate. Compassion literally means to suffer with. To suffer with. One of my favorite stories about St. John Vianney is anytime people gave him money, if it wasn't for the church, he would just turn around and give it to the poor. And sometimes he wouldn't have money, and the poor would come and ask him for money. And he would just smile and laugh and hug them and say, no, today I'm poor like you. Now I'm sure the poor didn't particularly appreciate that. Right? But the reality is, he never set himself above them. He didn't give money out of pity. He gave money out of compassion. In other words, he wasn't like, here, let me help you in your struggle. He's like, we're all in the same boat together, man. And it's sinking. So yeah, I'll pick up a pail. That's what truly humble people realize. They're helpful because they realize that they struggle with the same things that everybody else does. And it's like, I can sympathize. I can get it. Having removed the wooden beam from their own eye, they understand how much wood in the eye stinks, so they're happy to help you remove the splinter in yours. Now, how can we know if we're not humble? How do we know if we don't have true self-knowledge and live in it and accept it? Well, there are a number of things that the scriptures show us, right? One of them, the scriptures talk about all the time, that is the sign of an unhumble person, is scorn and contempt. Now, you might think of scorn and contempt and see like a B-movie villain twisting his mustache. That's not the voice of scorn and contempt. I know the voice of scorn and contempt because it plays in my head every day, right? But you've probably heard it too. Are you ready for it? You ready to hear what scorn sounds like? People are so stupid. All right, so see, the reality is, anytime you say people are so stupid, you're secretly excluding yourself and like the four people you respect. And anytime we go around condemning whole groups of people as idiots, unless we're deeply including ourselves in that number, we're not being humble. We're exalting ourselves over the vast majority of humanity and thinking we're superior to them. And in my calmer moments, I can tell you, with all sincerity, I'm an idiot too. So scorn is one thing. Another thing is hypocrisy. Now, hypocrisy is what we mean by that word today is not exactly what Jesus meant by it, whenever he condemns it. We mean by hypocrisy today is you say one thing and do another, or even worse, some people think that it means you don't live up to your ideals. Not living up to your ideals just means you're struggling. It doesn't mean you're a hypocrite. But what hypocrisy means in the Greek of Jesus' time is it means being an actor. You're playing a role. You're projecting goodness. Which is why Jesus then connects it to authenticity, right? A good tree bears good fruit. From the fullness of the heart, the mouth speaks, right? It's this connection of authenticity. Sometimes people will say about the moral life, fake it till you make it. Like, no, boo, that's hypocrisy. That's hypocrisy. We have another word for hypocrisy as Jesus meant it today. It's a lovely phrase. And people don't seem to realize that it's exactly what Jesus means by hypocrisy. Do you know what that phrase is? Virtue signaling. Virtue signaling. If you haven't heard that phrase, that's when people just go on social media and tell people all the right words and phrases so that people will think they're a good person without them putting any flesh in the game. Okay? And the reality there is, yeah, we can all code our language to sound much better than we actually are. But that's just hypocrisy. Now, I don't mean go around telling the cashier at Champa's like, I'm a depraved sinner. No, don't do that, okay? But don't think that just because you say the right words that makes you the right kind of person. It has to come from within. There has to be authenticity. And that's another mark of a humble person. Authenticity. Because they're living in the truth of themselves. In the first reading, we hear that when somebody is tested, when somebody is tried, the reality of who they are comes out. That's very helpful for self-knowledge. There are numerous times where I think I'm making progress in virtue, and then somebody says one thing about me and it eats me up all afternoon. Which is ridiculous. Because it shows how deeply arrogant and prideful I am. Like, I tease people all the time, and I expect them not to take it the wrong way. And yet one person says some snide or insulting thing to me, and it's gonna be like, how dare they say that to me? They're just so stupid. What am I, Godzilla? You can dare to say whatever you want to me. Okay, I'm not going to eat you, right? It's ridiculous how I think I should be above that in the cockles of my heart. And I'm not. And it just shows how prideful I am. Whenever we're tried, when we get like really impatient, I can't believe this happened. It just shows that you expect yourself to be better than the universe. Like we're little petted princesses and nothing should ever go wrong with us. Another way, connected to the virtue of hope, so I'm not going to get too deep into it because we've already talked about it with hope, that a lack of humility expresses itself as either despair or presumption. I don't think a lot of people realize that despair, not as a psychological issue, but as a moral choice, is a sign of pride. The things that I've done are so bad that God can't forgive me. Nothing can help me. I'm so terrible. You ain't that special. Or I can do whatever I want and go to confession and God will forgive me. You ain't that special. Okay. The idea that we think we can either flout God's laws with impunity because he's obliged to forgive us, or that when we sin, our sin is so great that it is stronger than God's mercy. Both of those are acts of pride. And a lack of humility certainly doesn't show any kind of real self-knowledge. And so, dear brothers and sisters, there's obviously other ways. And we'll talk about growth and humility a lot more next year. Because it's an essential part of the spiritual life, too. But with those basic ideas, and lots more, you know, pray to the Lord to give you knowledge of yourself and to accept that knowledge of yourself. Don't ask for it all at once, you'll shatter. Right, but pray to the Lord for a deeper and awakening knowledge of yourself and to live and accept that knowledge of yourself, to live in the truth, because you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. And so if you see this lack in you, then we look at what happens in the gospel, right? A good tree does not bear rotten fruit, nor a rotten tree bear good fruit. The difference, dear brothers and sisters, between trees and us is that the Lord can change, I mean, he can change trees too, but the Lord can change us inside and wants to change us inside from bad trees to good trees. Inside, in the depth, so that we're producing good fruit, like chocolate-covered strawberries and not, you know, quinoa. Right, but the reality, like good fruit, okay? Good fruit. And you see, that's the reality. That's why I call it the fundamental virtue. Because if we live in humility, in the core, then we'll have seven branches. Faith, hope, love, prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude. And those seven branches will bear good fruit. And the healthier we are inside, and that health is always matched with humility. Because another good word for humility is perfect sanity. The healthier we are inside, in terms of that living in the truth, the better fruit will produce. And so as we draw near to this Lenten season, pray for the virtue of humility. Pray for the virtue of humility. Because even the seven virtues themselves can be covered in snares. Even the seven virtues themselves can become temptations to pride. Even the seven virtues themselves can become a trap for us to pat ourselves on the back in our own self-sufficiency. Unless we first have humility. God bless you all.